Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you again from Denver today after four big days of convention fever. Lots of campaign news this week. Last night, before a stadium crowd of 84,000 at Invesco Field in Denver, Barack Obama made history.
With profound gratitude and great humility, I accept your nomination for presidency of the United States.
On Tuesday night, Hillary Clinton called for party unity, slammed John McCain, and threw her full support behind Obama.
No way, no how, no McCain. Barack Obama is my candidate, and he must be our president.
And John McCain, heading into his own GOP convention week, called a unilateral ceasefire for one short night, releasing a TV ad congratulating Obama.
Congratulations. How perfect that your nomination would come on this historic day. Tomorrow we'll be back at it. But tonight, Senator, a job well done.
This hour On Point, our weekly news roundtable, goes behind the headlines. You can join the conversation. Did the Democrats and Obama get the job done in Denver? And how will McCain and the GOP counterpunch next week? Joining me now from New York, Chrystia Freeland, U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times, has been in Denver all week. Now in New York, Chrystia, you must be straight off the plane. Thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure, Tom.
With us from Washington is Jibby Martinez, columnist and contributor for the Politico. Jibby, thank you for joining us.
Hi, nice to be here.
And with us from Boston is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Welcome, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Chrystia, and Jibby.
Chrystia, first to you. You were in Denver all week watching what many people saw, whether here or around the country, for that matter, around the world. What did you make of the Democrats' big show and Barack Obama last night?
I thought they all did a good job, a really good job. And I thought Obama's speech hit all the right notes. You know, for a long time, we have been hearing people saying that Barack Obama is fabulous at that lofty, inspirational rhetoric. But where are the specifics? Where is the meat? And I think he really delivered that. I think he was very strong on some economic specifics, very good, particularly on the tax point and on saying, actually, my plan is going to lower taxes for 95% of middle-class, working-class Americans. That was a really important point to hit. And I also think he did a really good job at speaking directly to John McCain and saying he wasn't afraid to take John McCain on as commander-in-chief. The other thing that I thought was really exceptional, and I think, you know, not something we knew in advance was going to happen, is I thought that 1-2 act of having the Clintons on Tuesday and Wednesday and Obama on the Thursday actually worked. I think they passed over the baton with a lot of grace.
We'll hear a lot from that speech last night. It was quite a scene with 80,000, 84,000 we're now being told in that enormous stadium, just filled right up to the rim. Beautiful night in Denver, lucky for them. The Denver weather is dry in August. Barack Obama saying enough of these years of George W. Bush-style administration and pushing that right on toward John McCain last night as he sought to rally all voters for a change this election year.
Tonight I say to the people of America, to Democrats and Republicans and independents across this great land, enough! This moment, this election is our chance to keep, in the 21st century, the American promise alive.
Jibby Martinez, there he is, enough, and in a tone that we have not heard much from Barack Obama, but we heard plenty last night. You've got the perspective of having watched from a little distance, Jibby. Anybody could be caught up in the swirl of 84,000 people, but watching from Washington, how has this looked, and how do you think Obama looked last night? How did he sound? What did you think of the meat of his message?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely on pitch. And one of the things that I thought he did that was very necessary was that, you know, he had to answer this question that's out there. You know, do you trust Barack Obama to make these changes? People want change. The question is he the guy? And I thought what was very interesting is that he basically put the cause before himself. And he said as much in his speech. He said, this is not about me. And I thought that was very important because he has to convince people that he is going to be the agent of change to the future. And he made a really good point of saying that, you know, McCain is the past politics, old politics, you know, and he's the future. And also I have to say that I had to watch it from a distance. And so I allowed myself to feel comfortable as a TV viewer watching Gavel to Gavel to see how the tone and pitch would change throughout the week. And I thought that the convention began very emotionally with Ted Kennedy on Monday, but then kind of went into this sort of dry spell where you basically had, you know, the big Hillary Clinton speech on Tuesday, the bigger one on Wednesday by President Clinton, and you could see a little bit of a crescendo, but there wasn't much in between, not much red meat. And I thought it was very interesting that Obama took upon the task to throw out that red meat and to make himself the leader of the party. And I thought it built up really well to last night.
Went hard after John McCain wrapping him around George W. Bush. Went hard after John McCain on what he would say about himself at the upcoming Republican convention in St. Paul. Let's listen.
And next week, we'll also hear about those occasions when he's broken with his party as evidence that he can deliver the change that we need. But the record's clear. John McCain has voted with George Bush 90% of the time. Senator McCain likes to talk about judgment, but really, what does it say about your judgment when you think George Bush has been right more than 90% of the time?
Barack Obama last night before 84,000. Jack Beatty, you checked in earlier this week and said the Democratic National Convention had bored you. Did you remain bored through last night's big stadium presentation?
Oh, my, no. I thought it was pyrotechnic. And, you know, among the antinomies that Obama set up in that speech is, I think, the very formidable one of past versus future. He's saying to McCain, you are yesterday's man. Now, how does a 72-year-old man say, no, I'm not. I'm in touch, but how do I get on the internet? I know what's going on, but let's see now. What's the difference between the Sunnis and the Shiites? I know about what's happening in the economy, but really, I don't know much about the economy. You know, it's a devastating position, it seems to me, for him to be in if that thematic can come back again and again. And it works mischievously to remind people, as we're going to be reminded today on his 72nd birthday, that John McCain is as old as he is. And this country has more or less bet on the future when it has had a chance to choose between future and past. Even Ronald Reagan, when he ran in 1980, he was very much on the future. That was his whole pitch. And I think this is a real tough thematic for McCain to contend with.
Chrystia Freeland, you know, there was such an interesting blend this week of Denver, I found, and I wondered what you think of it, of hope and apprehension. Barack Obama, clearly an extraordinary candidate, an extraordinary speaker, and I thought last night came across very substantively there, though the Republicans will pound at every aspect of what he had to say, no doubt, and all of that really lifting people up. We talked with Congressman James Clyburn last night, who had been, of course, in the Civil Rights Movement. Now he's the majority whip in the House. And it was so moving to me to hear him say, you know, I used to be a teacher, and I would tell the kids in my classes that they could do anything, they could be anything. I would tell them that, but they really couldn't ever believe it, and neither could I, but now they can. That image of Barack Obama before that crowd of Americans and American flags accepting that nomination, absolutely inspiring. And yet there was that apprehension all week long, even though it's the future they're talking about. And as Jack says, Americans love the future, Christian.
I think you're absolutely right to say that there was this sort of undercurrent of nervousness. I talked to Ed Rendell, the governor of Pennsylvania, earlier this week. And the way he put it is, he said he is, by the way, was a very strong Hillary Clinton supporter, still a little sore that she wasn't the nominee. So we have to take that into account. But he said, all of us are like cats on a hot tin roof. we're really nervous and we feel that we should be farther ahead in the polls than we are right now. And so I think there was that undercurrent of anxiety, and that anxiety, I think, is justified. You know, I think the Democrats went into this convention in a poorer position than they thought they would be in, and in a poorer position than sort of, you know, objective political science suggests they ought to have been in. The economy is in bad shape. War in Iraq is unpopular. George Bush is unpopular. The party that is not in power really should be doing much better than they were. So I think there was that anxiety. And what I think was really smart about Barack Obama's speech is he tried to move where the election is going to be fought. What the Republicans had done successfully in the couple of weeks ahead of the convention was to make it about Barack Obama, this unusual individual, and to sort of stir people's anxieties about that. And I think the Democrats were worried about that. What Obama really tried to do, and I think did pretty successfully last night, is say, this is not about me. This is a referendum on the past 8 years. Do you really want more Republicans in the White House?
J.B. Martinez, what do you think? Did he steal a march? Did he get the Republicans will have their march back next week, but did he get the Democrats out in front thematically last night?
He did get them out in front. The question is how long it'll last and whether they can maintain that enthusiasm. I mean, one of the things that I think John McCain's campaign has done very well is go after Obama's weaknesses. And, you know, there was that cable television ad that was running during the convention that the McCain campaign was running that showed a Hispanic woman who had supported Hillary Clinton who was now going to support McCain. And if you want to look at the voter that McCain is going after, that's it. You know, women, including Hispanics. And I don't think that they're going to give up on that. And we'll also see, depending on what Senator McCain's vice presidential choice is, you know, just how they plan to battle that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a big political week in the news, a week dominated by the Democrats in Denver and topped by Barack Obama's big speech last night. We're broadcasting today from the studios of public radio station KUVO in Denver. Chrystia Freeland, U.S. Managing Editor for the Financial Times, is with us from New York. J.B. Martinez from Washington and our own Jack Beatty. And let's go right to a call from Boston and Stavo. Stavo, you're on the air.
Hey, I was calling just because Barack Obama, I've never connected to because he has so much grace and it seems that he does everything so perfectly. Meanwhile, I'd watch Hillary Clinton as she prepared for her speeches and her dance was a little goofy and her clapping was just slightly off rhythm. And we can understand that. We've all been there where
sure.
People are clapping and we're just off. Barack Obama seems to do everything perfectly, so I've never had that empathy for him.
But and last night?
At the end of the night, I watched a speech. I thought it was a great speech. And then something happened to me that happened to me a few years ago when I read the book Blindness by Saramago. I wasn't sure what was going on, but after reading the book, I found myself sobbing uncontrollably. I still can't tell you why. Same thing.
Was it Obama? Was it something in Obama's presentation? Was it something different in his presentation, in his words last night?
Last night just made me sob uncontrollably afterwards. And I've saw Obama up in New Hampshire live. Didn't think much of him. Seen him on TV more than a few times. Always thought, you know, fine. But I don't know what it was about last night, but it was...
Last night, something got you over the line. Others have been there earlier. Chrystia, what do you think? Do you think Barack Obama has kind of, I don't know, maybe these close poll numbers have sent him to some kind of mountaintop to look within himself and try and bring, to show some deeper facets of himself or to reach out with a little more, empathy to the listener somehow?
I think that if Barack Obama's advisors could hear Obama sympathizers saying that they were moved to tears by the speech, those same Obama advisors would cry with frustration and terror, because this is exactly the sort of jujitsu move that they need to watch out for next week from the Republicans. And what we're going to see the Republicans doing next week, I think, which we've already had a foretaste of, is really hammering at the Democrats for daring to be hopeful, for daring to actually bring 84,000 people to a stadium, for daring to talk about really big themes and about change. We've seen this, you know, the whole celebrity line, Obama as the one, as the Messiah. Having said that, I think that Obama did a really good job both of connecting on the specific details, of making some specific policy proposals, but also of defending the notion of being a change agent. You know, he took head on this idea of, am I a celebrity? He took head on this notion of, it's just, as he put it, happy talk. And he said, you know what? It's actually okay to say, this is a moment in America when we need really significant change. And as he put it, you know, a guy like me who doesn't have, as he described it, a traditional pedigree is the person to do that. So I think that's going to be one of the debates we see coming out next week. Are you prepared to actually believe in major transformation, or are you kind of cynical and you think that's just political spin, that's just rhetoric?
Let's listen first to Barack going after the celebrity charge that has come from the GOP. Here he is talking about being raised by a grandmother who taught him about work and sacrifice, he said.
She's the one who put off buying a new car or a new dress for herself so that I could have a better life. She poured everything she had into me. And although she can no longer travel, I know that she's watching tonight and that tonight is her night as well. Now, I don't know what kind of lies John McCain thinks that celebrities lead, but this has been mine. These are my heroes. Theirs are the stories that shaped my life.
Jack Beatty, what about the jujitsu? Here's Barack Obama. He fills a stadium with 84,000 people. He is making history as an African-American man stepping up simply in accepting this nomination. But that big following and that venue has been made into a negative quite effectively by Republicans in recent weeks. As you watched it last night, Jack, you along with millions of other Americans, do you think he was able, with just that kind of bit we just heard, to begin to turn it back the other way?
Well, I think so. And I you know, I understand that Republican ploy, but I've just been reading two biographies of Winston Churchill. And what did Churchill's leadership consist of in the end, in the final analysis? He gave great, inspiring speeches. Those are leader acts. Those were the acts that have, you know, he made some decisions about the war, but really most of those decisions were made in consultation with other people, his generals, Roosevelt,
sure.
Stalin.
Mm-hmm.
It was the speeches. It was the spirit. Those things are presidential. And the idea that somehow being able to stir people, being lucid, being, you know, having a sense of occasion in speech, that's a liability in American politics. That's not, you know, that's that on its face, that seems to me to just be absurd. We remember our presidents for their speeches that define historic moments. And I think that's the idea that we can impeach this man's gift that way just is against history. Now, I think what the Republicans are doing, though, is they're trying to say Southern black or black preacher. That's what I think this stuff about the speeches, you know, it works subtly to remind people, oh, yeah, this is the way those black preachers talk.
Trying to put Obama in that mold,
well,
in that kind of
so.
A stereotype.
Without saying it, I do think so. I think that's the way they set it up. And really, you know, the currents that Obama sends forth go to the next multi, you know, racial generations to come. The currents backward bump into other currents. And those really are set in the 1960s with, yes, the Civil Rights Revolution, but also the reaction against it, the reaction against the Second Reconstruction, the realignment of the White South to the Republican Party. That's the force that these currents set back, these ripples set by Obama are going to run into those ripples, and we'll have to see. I mean, those ripples essentially say, you nominate a Northern liberal and you lose an election in America. Well, here's a Northern liberal, and we'll have to, and not only that, a black
Northern
liberal.
And it's worse than that,
liberal.
Jack, exactly. He's also African-American.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. There's that kind of dog whistle politics in those ads, in that line of attack.
Jibby, how about last night? After Berlin, Jibby, the McCain camp managed to turn that big Berlin appearance into a kind of catwalk equation with Britney Spears and Paris Hilton. Do you think the Denver Stadium can be turned back on Barack Obama, or has he somehow pushed back that as of yesterday?
Well, they're going to try to turn it back on him, but I thought what was even more interesting is that he did face that head on, too, and he said, look, you know, I don't know what kind of celebrity John McCain thinks I am, but, you know, I came from a working class background. I was on student loans and, you know, I have the same existence as many of y'all here. What, going back to the black question, though, I thought what was really interesting was that he, in doing his biography, really did emphasize the white part of his upbringing. You know, he started out this campaign as a presidential candidate, a Democrat who happens to be black, and tried to de-emphasize the racial, being that he is. And mm-hmm. And so I thought that last night he was trying to make people comfortable with him again and saying, look, you know, we had student loans. We had to work our way through college. My mother had to get up early in the morning and work her way through college. And, you know, we're just like you. And, you know, I think that when the Republicans meet next week, they're going to try to either make him seem sort of like this, monster that they don't know is coming, or they're going to attack Democrats for, being too liberal. But Obama is saying, look, you know, we're for personal responsibility like Republicans are. And by the way Bill Clinton preached.
Let's hear from the South. Augusta, Georgia. We've got caller Buddy. Hi, Buddy. You're on the air to Denver. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Hey, it was a phenomenal convention. We had an exciting time and I wasn't even there. But this is what I want to share with you. The voters will decide this election, not the media. We watch night after night. The media put labels, red meat, not enough, red state, blue state. You know what? We're beyond that. And we watch you parade, oh, gosh, is it going to be the Clinton? Who's going to make this? We knew from the beginning that it was going to be a phenomenal convention.
And did you get what you expected, buddy? Give it to us straight then, not the media, the way you saw it. What did you come away with from this week?
Oh, it was absolutely phenomenal. First of all, we all know this is beyond and bigger than Obama. It's about all of us voters for 8 years living through the paralysis of high gas prices, cronyism, all of this stuff that Bush said he was about compassion. And he has exercised the most inconsiderate, uncompassionate presidential election ever. So this is my take. We're going to the future, and the media can go with us. But stop encouraging and having media pundits talk about old chaotic stuff and seeing life through those filters. Take off those blinders, because grassroots democracy is happening in America, and we will vote on the change to get our jobs back, to get great health care. Obama was a vehicle. Complacency has been there the last 6 years, and people shouldn't be one-dimensional on morality. Morality is conserving energy. Morality is being stewards of the environment, giving people wages where they can have health care. All of the little children whose funds have been taken away by heartless people who have not voted on their behalf. This is what we're seeing. America, we can do better than this.
Buddy, we have got it. You say it loud and you say it proud, and we'll try not to get in the way. And I thank you very much for your call. Christian Freeland, you know, here's Barack Obama. As part of his answer to the celebrity charge, again last night, and we've heard this throughout his campaign, was, it's not about me, he said. It's about you, and pointed out to a stadium of 84,000 people and by extension to the country. Christian, do you think Americans, Buddy's ready for that? But do you think the electorate at large is really ready for that, really understands what that means? What does that mean?
Well, if I could, I think they might be. And I think he was very right to make the point. You know, one of the strongest lines from the speech, I think, was to accuse the Republicans of trying to make a big election about small things. And clearly, this is the way he's framing things. He's saying, you know, do you believe that America right now just needs little incremental improvements? Or do you think we need something big and transformational? And he's saying, I think we do need something transformational. Vote for me and we'll do that together. What I think was really interesting about Buddy's point is it speaks to something that I was picking up at the convention, and I'm sure you did too, Tom. You know, obviously, at these kinds of events, if you're a journalist, you hang out with other journalists. And what I really
not exclusively
was,
let us know
not exclusively a little bit though. Journalists are nice.
Of course, you rub shoulders, but I'm just
saying,
not only yes, sure.
And one thing that I think is really interesting is I think these attacks on the media coverage that began in the primaries, and actually Hillary Clinton began them, sort of accusing the media of being in love with Barack Obama, in the tank with Barack Obama, sharing his northern liberal sort of cosmopolitan worldview, and that we've seen the McCain campaign continuing. I think they have been effective in terms of actually making it quite difficult for a lot of journalists to feel comfortable writing about this emotional impact that Obama can have on voters.
And shying away from articulating what they're seeing.
Shying away from it, afraid that if you talk about the sort of response which your earlier caller had, crying at the speech, you will be accused not of reporting a phenomenon that you see, but of being an Obama cheerleader. So I think we actually have to watch that. And, you know, we as journalists have to be careful not to change the way we operate too much because of these political criticisms.
Right, that can cut both ways. Jack Beatty, on that point, I don't want to fail to say. I mean, you know, when you're at a convention like this, of course there's excitement, whether it's Democrat or Republican. The coloring of this convention, I mean that quite literally, because there was a more diverse attendance of delegates at this convention, I think, than there's ever been at any convention anywhere. It was quite striking. And when you saw the pride in the people on the nights when they were turning out for these big speeches, and Michelle Obama and especially Barack Obama, there was no failing to be moved by it, Jack. I don't want to stand behind some kind of, you know, screen of journalistic formality here, as Chrystia suggests we might. I don't think anyone could see what was going on last night and not be moved by it. Sitting with James Clyburn in the stadium last night, just to see how this man, who'd lived through so much of that history, was responding to this moment. And then tens of thousands of people flowing by with it just, you know, pouring out of them. I, for one, will not ignore it. It was right there. It was powerful. The question, I guess, Jack, is does it translate right on out to the nation? It's one thing when you're in the stadium. It's another when you're a continent away.
Well, you know, I think there are political moments and then there are historic moments. This was a historic moment, a black man leading the party of white supremacy, the party that in the 19th century voted every single Democrat in both houses of Congress against every civil rights bill, the party of segregation, the party even into the 1930s that got FDR to leave maids and field workers out of Social Security, the party that killed the lynching bill, the party even when I was a young kid, that had two segregationists nominated for the vice presidency in the 50s. That party, to have him as the nominee of that party, that even Republicans will say, well, you know, this says something good about the country, but we don't like Obama. So I just think there is a transcendent quality here. He's a black man. This is the country we have here. This is American history has been, you know, what Robert Frost said of poetry is true of American history. It has one subject, really, and that's race. Doesn't mean we've overcome, by no means, but I think everybody, there's just an objective quality to this that I think everybody recognizes, even if they say, well, the guy's a liberal, we're not for him. That's fine. How will it broadcast? I don't know. I just think that, you know, the racial realignment in the South really limited the Democrats to, what, 65,000 people in Ohio. And absent some kind of surge that doesn't seem in the offing now, that's what the election's probably going to come down to.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver, Colorado. This week, festivities for the Democrats and fears on the Gulf Coast of another big hurricane. Stevie Wonder worked up the crowd at Invesco Field in Denver last night with his hit love song, Signed, Sealed, Delivered.
Seen a lot of things in this old world. When I touch the baby,
84,000 people there. Judith Simon, a delegate from California, had a hard time finding the words to describe Obama's speech.
He was excellent. He's an inspiration. I have goosebumps. I can't really say.
And New Orleans resident Marita Johnson Butler remembers the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina after it made landfall 3 years ago today.
It was horrible. No food, people drowning, no water, no one to come and rescue us. It was just devastating.
And now a big storm, Gustav, bearing down on the Gulf Coast, maybe on New Orleans on that anniversary day. It's coming, it appears. The Republicans talking about delaying their convention in St. Paul. We don't know what they'll actually do with that. And this, CNN and ABC News now confirming that John McCain's running mate will be rather extraordinary pick, Sarah Palin, 44-year-old, first-term governor of Alaska. That would be a daring pick. She was just elected in 2006, running as a reform Republican in a GOP primary against the incumbent there, Governor Frank Murkowski, veteran Alaskan politician. She became the youngest governor in Alaskan history that fall. Strong conservative, opposes abortion rights, life member of the NRA. We'll talk more about Sarah Palin and that pick as the news continues to be confirmed there. I want to first try and wrap up here on the Obama front, because there's more to say. He went right at John McCain last night on the commander-in-chief front, last night challenging John McCain on the question of commander-in-chief character and who is ready to lead.
If John McCain wants to have a debate about who has the temperament and judgment to serve as the next commander-in-chief, that's a debate I'm ready to have.
And then Obama criticized McCain as well for turning his sights on Iraq instead of focusing on the fight in Afghanistan.
When John McCain said we could just muddle through in Afghanistan, I argued for more resources and more troops to finish the fight against the terrorists who actually attacked us on 9/11, and made clear that we must take out Osama bin Laden and his lieutenants if we have them in our sights. You know, John McCain likes to say that he'll follow bin Laden to the gates of hell, but he won't even follow him to the cave where he lives.
Barack Obama at the big stadium last night, before Obama even took the stage. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson went on the offensive against John McCain.
John McCain served his country in war. We honor his service, but that doesn't mean we have to make him president.
New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson last night. We're joined by Chrystia Freeland, U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times, Jibby Martinez, columnist and contributor for the Politico, and our own Jack Beatty. Jibby, how about the commander-in-chief front? Bill Richardson warmed up the crowd on that front. Barack Obama went right at it, staring right in the camera, saying, look, you want to talk about who's got the judgment and temperament, interesting way to frame it, to be commander-in-chief, I'm ready to have that debate. Is that an effective way for Barack Obama to come at this one, Jibby?
Yes, it is. And, you know, he was the first one probably to say really out loud the word temperament, because everyone knows that John McCain's temperament is something that has always been questioned and will be questioned more forcefully. And I can tell you that the McCain campaign last night was particularly annoyed by that particular line. And I do think that, you know, this is a really strong signal from the Obama campaign that they are not going to take this lightly and that they are going to fight. And I think that's why Joe Biden was the perfect vice presidential match for him. Biden is not shy. I've covered Congress for many years and seen him in the corridors. They're just willing to take on any argument anyone wants to pose to him. So I think it's definitely something in their playbook. They know that the Republicans are going to come after them next week as possibly being weak against terrorism and the war, wanting to get out of Iraq before it was, a mission accomplished, literally. So, yes, I think Obama really had to talk about that last night.
And Chrystia, what about it? Do you think it works? Tucker Bounds, spokesman for McCain, came back saying after the speech, tonight Americans witnessed a misleading speech that was so fundamentally at odds with the meager record of Barack Obama. And yet Obama was going straight at McCain on what is seen as McCain's turf.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Jibby is absolutely right to point to the stylistic point, you know, that they are going to not be shy about taking McCain on the commander-in-chief front, notwithstanding the very different life experiences of these two candidates. But I think also the foreign policy content was really interesting. And we saw a tougher, more hawkish, if you will, Barack Obama than we've seen before. I think you should pay particular attention to the several references he made to Russia and Georgia. And
yes.
It's interesting that yesterday, arguably the most important political day in Barack Obama's life, he made time to meet with the Speaker of the Georgian Parliament, who I spoke to after that meeting, who was in Denver. And the Speaker of the Georgian Parliament, young guy, politician himself, he said to me, you know, I was really surprised that he had the time to talk to me. If it were me, if I were in Obama's position, I wouldn't have talked to me. I would be focusing on my speech. So that just says to me that Obama is taking seriously the need to show, as he put it, he is prepared to curb Russian aggression. He's not only talking about multilateralism, about negotiation, but he knows that there are tough issues in the world, and he's going to stand up to the people who he think, the countries that he thinks are dangerous.
Jack Beatty, I want to look at this the VP pick on the Republican side, and Jibby and Chrystia as well. Fox, ABC, CNN, all now confirming that John McCain's running mate will be Sarah Palin, 44-year-old first-term governor of Alaska. She's only been governor for less than 2 years of that northern state. Before that, served on the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission on the Wasilla City Council. Wasilla, a fairly small burg in Alaska. This is big news. This is a woman on the Republican ticket. This is a 44-year-old, very young running mate for John McCain. Jack Beatty, your first response.
I think it's a terrific move. I mean, just strategically. I mean, it gives everybody a new story to talk about. All these guys in suits, and here's a young woman. You know, people talking about, you know, the future. She's got five kids involved in the future. It affirms John McCain's, reputation as a maverick, as somebody who thinks outside the box. It gives him a young person on that stage. And I think in a debate, it really kind of puts a parenthesis of deference and inhibition around the eupeptic Biden. I mean, he's just going to have to behave himself a little differently, comport himself a little differently from the way he would with a Mitt Romney. I mean, we saw that with Obama in the primaries. You know, you just can't. It's so easy for men to condescend to women, and he's just got to. He's just got to watch that. So I think it puts him in a bit of a box. And yeah, she doesn't have much experience, but she seems to be a person of good background, good heart. So I think it's a terrific choice.
Jibby, what do you think? Here's Sarah Palin, 44 years old, compelling personal story, gave birth just this spring in April to her fifth child, who has Down syndrome, has another son in the Army who, like Joe Biden's son, will be deploying to Iraq this month. What do you make of the choice, Jibby?
Well, it goes back to a point I made earlier in the show, which is that McCain really does want to go after women and after women who might have voted for Hillary Clinton but not Barack Obama. And she has this very deep family history, and so I think that that's going to help her. I also think, interestingly, that it just shows how the Republicans think that they have a winning issue on energy issues. And she will
because be Alaska is an energy-rich state.
Right, and that is part of her background, too. And so I think that, and the polls have been showing that the Republicans have been scoring well on that one issue. When they're losing on everything else, the economy and the war and health care, education, everything else, they've been scoring points on energy. And the other thing I would say about, I think that, you know, the point about Biden having to make sure he's not condescending is a correct one. Biden can't overplay his hand. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles her. I mean, Biden was not condescending to Hillary Clinton during the debates, I don't think. But Hillary Clinton has more experience than Sarah Palin does. So it will be interesting to see how Biden handles this in the debate and if he can hold himself in check but still come across as the one who is more experienced on foreign policy, obviously.
Let's take a call from Milton, Massachusetts, and Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air to Denver.
Hi. You know, I'm a Mao, how my spirits are, but even before I heard Obama's speech, I received a corrective form of something I read in the Globe from Dan Payne, a former Democratic media consultant.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he said, Enjoy it now, Democrats, because the next 68 days are going to be grisly. And what was he pointing to? Basically, the Republican attack strategy, their willingness to spread mistruths or out-and-out lies through surrogates and have them spread. I mean, this strategy, to me, has gone back way to the Lee Atwater days. And the Democrats always try to take the high ground, and you know what? They get dragged down every time.
We heard John McCain congratulating Barack Obama in an ad last night on his nomination. Did that look different to you, or just like a moment in the sun?
I think that what they do, and this is what Dan Payne said, they fog up the air with nice things, bad things, little things, small lies, big lies. And I think most people process the news from television and what they receive there. I'd be interested in what your guests think of my point of view.
Jeff, let us pick it up. First, another call from Providence, Rhode Island. Peter, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I was just calling to see what your opinions were about John McCain's new VP. Since Obama began his campaign, they've said that he was untested, inexperienced, not enough time in the Senate and everything like that. And now his VP is pretty much a mirror image of his record. They've both been in office since 2006. I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, thanks very much, Peter. Christia, how about it? Part of the attack on Obama has been he's inexperienced. Here we've got John McCain today, 72, and now he'll have a 44-year-old running mate, Barack Obama, 47, and Sarah Palin, the youngest governor in Alaska history, and not that for very long. How does her youth come across as a plus and minus? I guess it's got to if she's a heartbeat away from the presidency here.
Well, I think it's a really interesting, and I agree with Jack and Jibby, really a rather brilliant choice by McCain. She is the Republican Barack Obama, isn't she? I mean, she is not that experienced, but she has this fabulous life story, this fabulous personal narrative. She is not a white man, and it seems as if America is finally ready to have someone who's not a white man somewhere in the White House and not just married to one of the white men there. So I think that is, you know, really rather brilliant. And part of what makes it possible for the Republicans to select her is the fact that Barack Obama is in the same mold. So absolutely, if it were a more classic Democratic ticket, you could see huge possibilities for attacking Sarah Palin's inexperience, particularly given John McCain's age. He will be the oldest guy accepting the nomination. That's a big deal. But it's hard for me to see how the Democrats can really go after her very strongly along those lines, given the comparisons that could instantly be drawn with Barack Obama, who, after all, is running for the presidency.
Boy, this is going to be some kind of fall campaign. Let's get a call from Milan, Illinois, and Rachel. Rachel, you're on the air to Denver.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. What you haven't talked about yet is the economy, and I think Obama made it clear last night that Americans, Democrats, Republicans, and independents cannot afford another 4 years of George Bush policy.
Does it make a difference to you if John McCain has a young, charismatic woman at his side, Rachel?
I think that it doesn't matter. When I fill up my tank, when I check out at the grocery store, when I worry about paying tuition and my energy bills, that's what's going to cause me to vote, not that there's a woman my age in the vice president's position.
Rachel, let's listen to just a bit of that piece of the speech from Obama last night, talking about the economy, talking about restructuring taxes to help small businesses and working families.
Unlike John McCain, I will stop giving tax breaks to companies that ship jobs overseas, and I will start giving them to companies that create good jobs right here in America. I'll eliminate capital gains taxes for the small businesses and startups that will create the high-wage, high-tech jobs of tomorrow. I will cut taxes. Cut taxes for 95% of all working families. Because in an economy like this, the last thing we should do is raise taxes on the middle class.
Barack Obama putting the policy meat in the sandwich last night. Let's get one more call here from Chris in Norwell, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a Democrat from Massachusetts, and I just want to say I think this is a brilliant move on the part of the Republicans with nominating Sarah from Alaska, because they've capitalized on exactly what this election has meant to the Democrats, which is nominating a young politician and nominating a woman. And they're going to come out and they're going to say, wow, we have a VP choice who is a young woman. They're going to take the Hillary Clinton voters. I mean, this is really going to be a fight for the Democrats this year. I mean, when Obama got the nomination, I thought, wow, this is really going to mean something. But now I think it's really going to be a fight. This is unbelievable.
Chris, thanks for claiming it is going to be something. Jack Beatty, what do you think? Obama, Biden, McCain, Palin, mirror image tickets somehow?
Well, it certainly doesn't leave the, as Krista said, the usual contrast. This is something new. This is the future, even for the Republican ticket, too. And I think all that's to be welcomed. There is a cloud here. According to the Los Angeles Times, there's an ethics investigation of the governor because questions have arisen of whether she fired her ex-brother-in-law from the state troopers, whether that was kosher or not. Well, I don't know. And I don't know how that will hurt or help. And she, in her position on the ANWR drilling, is, it seems to me, opposite from that of Senator McCain. So they'll have to get on the same page there. But I think it's really exciting.
Well, it has been quite a week in Denver. And with this news and everything we've seen this week and the speech last night promising an amazing political fall for the American people, I hope they're up for it. This is history and the future all at once coming straight at us. Krista Freeland with the Financial Times, U.S. Managing Editor there, joining us from New York today, straight back from Denver. Krista, always great to have you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure as always, Tom.
And Jibby Martinez, columnist and contributor for the Politico. Jibby, wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Jack Beatty, thanks for joining us today. Thank you very much for being here, Jack.
Great pleasure.
Listeners, great being with you all week from Denver. We'll be in St. Paul with the GOP next week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.